This is WFAE Talks. I'm Greg Collard, but more importantly, Lisa Miller and Ben Bradford join me, as they do just about every week, for this podcast in which we talk about some stories making news. This week, we'll discuss the election, movement in increasing teacher pay, and the Panthers' first-round pick. Ben has a few thoughts on that.
Yeah, I can supply some thoughts on that. Yeah,
I just surprised you with that, didn't
you? You did. I wasn't expecting to talk about that.
I have more thoughts on Johnny Manziel, but that's all right.
Okay, well, we'll want to hear that. We'll hear about that. Well, guys, you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Tom Tillis and Kay Hagan will face each other in the fall, but it seems like they've already been running against each other for a while.
That's right. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the day before the election, I saw a commercial, which was it was from an outside group, but it was Tillis. It was an ad supporting Tillis and attacking Hagan, which is funny when you think about it, because he hadn't actually passed his primary yet. So we know that they've been running ads attacking Hagan. We know that they've been running ads for Tillis. But to see the both ad before he's actually not only won, because we knew he was the front runner in these mm-hmm. elections, but the question was, will he get over 40%? Because if he gets over 40%, then he doesn't have to do a runoff. If he doesn't get over 40%, then it means that, you know, he's got another few months, or, you know, at least another month and a half or so of running against a another Republican in a runoff primary. Mm-hmm. So it shows a lot of confidence. I mean, their internal polling must have been, you know, must have made them pretty confident, I think, that they were going to exceed that threshold.
And the rhetoric began almost immediately then, too, that election night. We're seeing a lot
we just got blasted with press releases from all comers. You know, you had on one hand, you had in their concession speeches, you know, I was over at Mark Harris, who's a Charlotte pastor, Baptist, who
finished third.
Finished third. Yeah, exactly. He pulled about 18% of mm-hmm. the vote. And you know, he in his concession speech, part of it was throwing his support behind Tillis. And at the same, so you had that happen. And of course, at the same time, we just had, you know, blasts from the Democratic Party attacking Tillis as a candidate. You had, you know, blasts already happening, you know, from National Republican Party supporting Tillis, attacking Hagan. So it's just, you know, here we go.
There's a few things that have caught my attention. I was just looking at some of the ridiculous slew of emails and political rhetoric we are regularly getting in our inbox. One, the North Carolina Republican Party, it kind of cracks me up. They have a new logo. Just about every press release comes with a picture of Kay Hagan sitting or standing with President Obama. It's basically their new logo.
Right.
And again, that's, you know, every word that comes from Tom Tillis's mouth. He groups her with Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and President Obama and Kay Hagan's Obamacare, because it's all Kay Hagan was totally responsible for Obamacare. You know, she was the impetus behind it. You know,
I mean, what you do just as a strategy, and this isn't especially revelatory, I don't think, but what you basically do is you say, okay, well, who are the most unpopular, most widely recognized people, and that we can connect our opponent to try to drag her down? Because one of the problems that you have in a race that is as prominent as a Senate race, you're still talking about a midterm election. You're talking about primary time. You're talking about people who are lesser known. So you say, okay, well, who are the most well-known people that, you know, the people that are going to be voting, we think they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you try to associate with them.
And at the same time, Kay Hagan, a lot of her press releases have, and I should say, I don't know if they're from her press releases or the Democratic Party. I think they're from her. But anyway, you often hear Tom Tillis referred to as his official title is Special Interest House Speaker Tom Tillis.
Oh, absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, it's not like there's not a slew of special interest money coming in and spending on behalf of the Kay Hagan campaign in this race.
Tom Tillis. It's coming. It's pouring in on both sides. I haven't looked at the latest numbers, but we know that this is going to be one of the biggest races, if not the biggest race in the country in terms of outside money coming in. Because, you know, I talked to Catawba College professor Michael Bitzer, who's a frequent guest on the show, and he talked about it as, you know, this race here, this could be the swing race that determines who controls the Senate. And that's a very, very big deal.
A lot is at stake. So I'm kind of looking forward to this. I like that we can focus on one big one in a way. I think I like that.
Oh, to the detriment of the other races. Right?
There are other races, but this is going to be.
There's still a 12th district race.
Yeah. There is a 12th district race.
We've got state senate races and some state house races. Yeah. We've got a sheriff race.
Sheriff's race is going to be interesting.
Supreme Court.
Yeah. And Supreme Court is going to be very interesting, too. I agree. We will not ignore all other races.
County commission at large.
That's right. Actually, that was interesting.
It'll be interesting.
We've already lost one commissioner.
Yeah.
Kim Ratliff, mm-hmm. who's an at-large commissioner right now. It was top four in the primary, mm-hmm. and she was the number five Democrat.
Top three.
Thank you. Yes. I'm sorry. Pardon me. Top three. She was the number four. Thanks for the question there. Top three. She was the number four. And so she's, we already know that she will not be returning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on the Republican side, it's kind of interesting. You see with all the reval, for example, one of the folks who were really pushing for another reval, she's running for commissioner at large, too. So it could be an interesting race.
I think that the 12th district, I think that is interesting. Alma Adams kind of killed everybody in that race.
Yes. And in reference to what you were saying earlier, she does have a strong advantage going into the general election because it's such a Democratic district.
Yeah,
although she is going against a guy, a Republican, Vince Coakley, does have some name recognition because of his time as with one of the TV news stations.
Here. Yeah, but he's going to be a long shot. In that race, this is one of those races where it's widely considered to be if you win the primary, you are highly likely to win the race.
Well, other issues in government and in education and the class affects the classroom, too. Teacher, I'm sorry, I'm distracted.
You're distracted by our special guest.
We have a guest.
A real live in the flesh third grader. We talk about you guys all the time.
Third grade reading. This is my daughter, Leah. She's, we mention her class sometimes as we talk about the third grade reading law. And she does not want to speak, but she was spinning around in her chair.
Oh, Leah, say hi at least. You can say hi. There we go. All right.
So, are you ready for EOGs? And no, do you want to take EOGs and all these other state tests?
What is an EOG?
End of grade test.
Okay.
One of the standardized testing.
Do you have to pass that to go on to fourth grade? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're going to crush it.
No, I'm not.
You're not going to crush
it? Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
So, I don't believe that.
But she's here because she had to go home early yesterday, so I'm not keeping her out of school on purpose, but she had to wait, but she's early fine, but because of school policy, she has to wait 24 hours before she returns to school, so it's a big pain.
It's a bring your daughter to work day.
Exactly.
We've enjoyed having her.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, you covered, there was some movement in the teacher pay, or increasing teacher pay this week. Governor McCrory wants to increase the pay of beginning teachers. Tell us what his plan is a little bit.
Yeah, so the big new thing with this is that he is proposing, and there was the $2,200 raises for next year he wanted for teachers in their first 9-10 years. But this week he proposed basically at least a 2% raise for all the teachers beyond that. Which was surprising to, I think, many folks. I mean, he had said even late last week that he was there was a statement that he was looking over plans to increase teacher pay for all teachers. But we're also hearing all this news about budget revenue shortfalls.
Right. They're talking about a $400 million budget shortfall.
Yeah, at least that.
But there's savings, he says.
So the governor says, hey, but we actually have $600 million in savings, so that's not going to be a problem this year. But still, it's really unclear where it's going to cost about $265 million just in raises next year under the governor's proposal. And it's really unclear where that money is going to go to, come from. I asked the state budget director, Art Pope, I said, so, you said you have this $265 million built into the budget, but, how are you building that in? Are there cuts in other places? And, basically he said all the details of that are coming out next week when
I found that really weird. I mean, they're going to be proposing this pay increase, and then where the money is going
to
come from.
and to be fair to him and the governor, they did say, hey, we're expecting revenue to grow about 1.7% next year. But the other thing, and I've been talking about this, is how they expect, because of the tax overhaul, they're not seeing all of the withholdings. You know, we have less withholdings coming into that's, the amount that's taken out of your paycheck every period. Because of this overhaul, it's kind of a simplified form you filled out. So they're expecting to get more, that extra money back in April. So he mentioned that as well. But obviously, you got state lawmakers wringing their hands and saying, hey, this sounds good, but I don't know how we're going to pay for it. Phil Berger, Senate Pro Tem Phil Berger, sent out this really tepid statement after the governor's announcement about the teacher pay raises. It was basically like, I got behind the, $2,200 raises for teachers early on in their careers. I haven't seen this plan, but we're happy to look over it. So
there's much in the dark as...
Exactly. But it'll be interesting. The short session starts on Wednesday. So, we'll definitely be staying tuned to that. But, on the other side of this is the sort of long-term plan you're finally hearing from the governor about what he plans to do with teacher pay. Because right now it's been going year to year, and the pay schedule is pretty much frozen, and there hasn't been much to work towards. So he did give a glimpse of that, which would include paying teachers more for basically being leaders at their school, mentoring other teachers, giving them extra money for working in hard-to-staff schools. So there's going to start a pilot program soon, and
that's something that Peter Gorman did in CMS a few years ago. He gave bonuses for going to work in harder staff schools.
And a lot of in what you see in some parts of this plan has been tried out at CMS. Right next year, they're going to be trying out in several schools this teacher, this mentoring sort of role where you get more if you mentor, and you get a lot more if you mentor, almost like up to $20,000 more to be kind of a teacher leader. And the thought there is that, if you want to get paid more, you can stay in the classroom. You don't have to go over into administration. We want to keep the good teachers with our kids.
But there's another proposal out there from the lieutenant governor that you reported on.
Dan
Foster wants to have a
Forrest,
plan. Dan Forrest wants to have a plan where...
Forrest wants to foster a plan.
Foster, yes, thank you. Where we can just create a fund that we can give to it, maybe get a tax-deductible donation or give some of our refund back to this fund to go directly toward... increasing the pay of teachers.
I can hear that you're eager to do that in your voice right now.
I did find the idea a little comical, I'll be honest. But I have trouble seeing the mass population saying, yeah, sign off my refund to go to someone, especially as some people pointed out in your story. People think it's the job of lawmakers anyway to assign money to give teachers more money.
Yeah, right.
They're public employees, so that means they're paid by the government. The government determines their salaries, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, or that if the government wants to pay them more, they should make them a higher priority, and that their beef is that lawmakers haven't given teachers enough priority.
Right.
The question, I was speaking with Todd Cohen with Philanthropy North Carolina. He reports on the philanthropy world, advises nonprofits, and he kind of said, well, the big question, of course, is why do you give money to the state for something they're already doing as far as covering?
He was very skeptical of this.
Well, he said they need to convincingly answer that question. Mm-hmm. And, I talked to a random sampling of folks around the university area. And most of them were pretty, I might even say, you know, at least one of them was appalled, and others were kind of scratching their heads about why this, you know, why this would work this way.
And had nothing to do with their opinion of whether or not teachers need to get paid more.
No. I mean, most all of them said they should get paid more. But, you know, to be fair to Dan Forrest, I mean, he says, hey, you know, this is basically reward, you know, this is just a small piece of the puzzle. And this is rewarding teachers who display creativity, really, you know, good teachers who go beyond and above and beyond. And he did mention that the legislature could park money into this endowment, so it wouldn't all be contributions. However, it wouldn't be set up that way. It would be all contributions, how it's set up. So, I mean, it's seems like it would be a very difficult case to make. But then, you know, you have, for example, lots of, you know, businesses, private foundations giving money to Project Lift schools in West Charlotte. But the thing is, I mean,
that's for a dedicated.
That is an intervention. That is a very dedicated use of money instead of putting into this pot where you're not sure how it's going to be spent. And then you got the example of the North Carolina Education Lottery money, which gets tapped to plug other budget holes. So, you know, it's not a great record for the state to pitch around. Hey, you know, this actually sounds good, you know? So you had superintendents up there who said, for example, Mooresville Graded School Superintendent Mark Edwards said, hey, we'd love more than 2%, but this is a great start, and we need to really rally around this. So I think you're seeing at least, you know, many people saying, we could do more, but we gotta push hard for this.
Well, next topic, Kelvin Benjamin. Yep. He is the Carolina Panthers' first-round pick.
He's got a great last name. I think the
why is Ben Bradford?
My name is Benjamin. His last name is Benjamin.
Oh, okay.
So
all right.
Making
a
joke. Okay, it was a bad joke. Thank you for making me explain it. Kelvin Benjamin. Yeah, so first, let me just say I don't watch a ton of college football, so I can't really scout this guy too much for you. But I can tell you he is a big receiver, 240 pounds, which is very big for a receiver, known for being able to jump up, get a lot of spring in the air, and, you know, grab jump balls. The Panthers are in a situation where they've lost their top four wide receivers from last year. So that's obviously a big, big need, and probably more so than any other team in the league. So they've got a big need there. And what's interesting about the pick is, you know, I think a lot of people are excited about Kelvin Benjamin as a prospect, because those big receivers, one, they're going to be more durable and being able to go up and get the ball, win jump balls, get in the end zone when you're playing in the red zone, and they throw it, they can go up and grab it.
Especially when Cam Newton throws the ball.
He's got some speed for a guy who's as big as he is. With all that said, I think one of the things that's kind of interesting about the pick, and one of the criticisms of the pick, is that the Panthers need a receiver right now, and Benjamin is looked at as being somewhat raw. He's got one of the highest drop rates of any of the, if not the highest, of any of the first round picks. As a matter of fact, I was reading looking over one of his best games where, you know, he multiple touchdown game and all that. He'd had six drops in the game, which is a lot. And one of them turned into an interception. So that's something that you need to correct. And you know, we've seen other examples of people reaching for a raw prospect and then that person not having a lot of time to develop. Obviously, we'll see what happens. You know, to some degree, draft picks are all crapshoot.
Yes, they are.
And so, you know, it's hard to project what will happen. But I think that in terms of situation, it's interesting to see the Panthers grab somebody who's considered to become somewhat raw for when they need somebody so quickly and somebody who's very ready.
Thanks for the analysis.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will just say
you.
The one thing, I would not be surprised to see them pick another receiver in the next, either in the second round or the third round, so another receiver today. And we see that a lot. You pair them together, maybe someone comes in more ready.
All right. We'll hold you. We'll see if you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you.
You.